Well, good morning, friends, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kelly S. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Today is Tuesday, August 6, 2024, and this is the 7 a.m. Eastern Time Vision for You meeting. Today, we're reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in More About Alcoholism. We're on page 37, second paragraph that says, "You may think this is an extreme case," through one paragraph ending with how it could have happened, comments on just that one paragraph. So today's readers are 12 steps will be Mary F., 12 traditions will be Susan G., Larry K. will be reading the text, Colleen M. reading page 160. Backup reader today. Newcomer greeter is Chris W., and our second hour host is Christine G. The reference number yesterday, Monday, August 5th, 2024, 7 a.m. Eastern Time, is 21628, 21628. And the 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 21629, 21629. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, quote, "Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers," end quote. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Mary F. to read the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Hey, Mary.
Hey, good morning. This is Mary F., a compulsive overeater from Virginia. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to other compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to serve.
Well, thank you so much, Mary F. And now we'll have Susan G. read the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Good morning, Susan.
Hey, good morning, Kelly and everybody. Susan G., recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups in OA or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion, and we need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you. I'll pass.
Well, thanks so much, Susan G. Appreciate it. So here's how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. So to share, you'll press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We are in More About Alcoholism. We're on page 37, the second paragraph. It says, you may think this is an extreme case, through that paragraph ending with how it could have happened. We'll be commenting on that one paragraph. And Larry K. is going to get us started. Hey, good morning, Larry.
Hey, Kelly, good morning to you. Thanks for your service. I'm Larry K. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. Next day, we would ask ourselves, in all earnestness and sincerity, how could it have happened? So, you know, when I read this paragraph, I think one of the key words in this entire paragraph is always. But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning. There inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. This always happened to me. And how many mornings of our lives did we wake up and we would swear, you know, to God and to our loved ones and to anyone who would listen with, you know, with tears, you know, welling up in our eyes that we're not going to eat that way again. How many times did we cry, you know, at night, into the night, and beg God to stop us from doing this again. Stop me from doing this, God. I can't go on like this. And I didn't feel human, and I had no life. And every day, I noticed that I was getting fatter and fatter, and I was getting more and more miserable. Yet every single day, I swear to you, every single day, I told myself, I'm not going to eat that way again. I'm not going to do this to myself again. And there I was, ordering 2 large pizzas once again. There I was, you know, pulling into the fast food drive-thru again. There I was, piling the cellophane bags and the bakery boxes, into my shopping cart. You know, why? why in the world would I do that to myself? Yeah, you know, I wouldn't treat my worst enemy that way. You know, if I treated, I've heard it said, if I treated any of my friends that way, would I have any friends? That, I wouldn't treat anyone like that. And yet day after day after day, I took the one life that I was given by God, and I threw it away like a piece of trash in search of either the anticipatory excitement of a pizza or something, you know, in search of the numbing effect of a donut. And this is the mental blank spot that they're referring to, the big book is referring to. You know, we are in a perpetual state of amnesia before we take that first bite. And you know what? You and I will never get 1 second of that time back. Not 1 second of all those seconds. I won't get any of it back. But I'll tell you something else. I am not going to live that way for one more second of my life. I will not give this disease one
more
second.
That's time, Larry.
Okay, I'm going to wrap up, Kelly. See, today I have freedom. I don't live like that anymore, and I don't eat like that anymore, and I don't diet with group support. And so, you know, I could be on this line every single day soaking up the wisdom of others, and if I don't work the steps as precisely laid out in this book, I'm not going to have a spiritual awakening that's going to give me this freedom, and freedom is not free. I'm going to have to do something for this, and with that, I pass. Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks so much, Larry, for getting us started. Okay, so we are now going to open up the meeting for sharing. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. If you shared on last Friday or yesterday on any vision meeting, please allow others the opportunity to share today. Please keep your share to 3 minutes, allow as many time as possible for other shares. I'll remind you when your time is up. Please give me your first name, initial of your last, and where you're calling from. Go.
Christina J.
Lisa Christina. O.
Tina S.
Janet B.
Tina.
Rick J.
Janet. Rick.
Pete.
Pete.
Dale H. from Seattle, Washington.
Dale H.
What page are we on, please?
Hang on a second. Who was that? Who else was that? Bonnie?
Leanne W.
Who was it? Oh, Leanne. Leanne W. Was there anybody else?
Melissa B.
Melissa?
Yes.
Melissa. B?
B as in Bravo.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we are on page 37, second paragraph. You may think this is an extreme case. That's where we're at today. So here's the lineup for now. Christina J., Lisa O., Tina S., Janet B., Rick J., Pete B., Gail H., Leanne W., and Melissa B. So if you can make sure your phone is muted, star one, so we can have a nice quiet meeting. We will get started with Christina J., followed by Lisa O. Hey, Christina, good morning.
Good morning, Kelly. Good morning, everyone. Christina J. in North in recovery. You know, I started Envision in 2014. Before then, my toe was in and out of rooms. I didn't even know what it was all about. Never could find a sponsor, blah, blah, blah. But the miracle began in 2014, the slow turtle across the Sahara miracle. I wasn't one of these people that got struck abstinent because it took a long time for me to gain the full awareness of the beauty of this program. And that's the key word for me, awareness. Awareness of that first bite. Awareness of what the previous share was speaking about. Why? Why did I do it? Where was my thoughts? You know, paraphrasing, of course, here. But what's going on? How come this happens? You know, and through the years, sponsors would say to me as we began, again, are you done? And at first, I was like, yes, I'm done, I'm done, I'm finished, I can't do this anymore. And then over time, sponsors would say, after I relapsed yet again, are you done? And I'd say, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I can tell you today, if I was to work the steps again and a sponsor said, have you been done? I'd say, yes, I'm done. Because through the years, and that's only with God's help in this program, I can say that because I can't do this on my own. I have this program that has brought me the miracle of having the food down, of having this beautiful food neutrality and a slow growing awareness of my spiritual dis-ease in life that I get to clean up with these steps. But through the years, you know, I have come into a place of knowing that I can't do this by myself. And I am done today with God's grace and mercy. So if you're out there and you're just beginning, hang on for the ride. You know, and if you're out there and you're relapse, hang on for the ride. And slowly but surely, we all come to the place with God's grace and us, our willingness to work the program, that we can say, I'm done, as long as we continue to work it. But in the meantime, it's a mystery. For years, it was a mystery why I picked up, and I could tell you endless stories of being like completely like going to the store for my boss or the bank, and knowing I was in discomfort on some level, not doing the work in program. And on the way, I'd be like, oh, I got to get something. Let me get something sugar-free. And then I buy one sugar-free, and it's like, that's not going to do it. Pretty soon, I was in the store buying the real stuff, you know. So the key is working this program to freedom. And a lot of people say, oh, I worked this program hard, yet I still picked up. There's something missing. For me, I had to keep picking up until I got done with all the suddenlies, all the excuses, till I became deeply aware of why I would pick up. You know, and we say, well, we pick up because we're allergic to food. Yeah, but I also pick up because I'm in discomfort. And I got to work that discomfort with this program. So
I'm Christina.
God bless everyone. God bless everyone on this journey. And thank you for being there for me. I pass.
Thank you so much, Christina J. All right, Lisa O is up next with followed by Tina S. Good morning, Lisa. Where are you calling from?
Good morning. This is Lisa O, a recovered grateful compulsive overeater from Worthington, Massachusetts. Thank you, everyone, for all your service. I love this paragraph. As all of them, there's something always good. But I just have such a great example of this. You know, 5 years ago, a couple weeks prior to that, you know, great binge, right? Thought it's going to solve all my problems, make me feel better, blah, 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 blah. And woke up in the middle of the night so incredibly sick, such a severe headache that I really thought I should go to the hospital. Like, I was in that much pain and so miserable. But I was afraid to wake my husband up because why do you have this headache? You know, I'd have to share. If I go to the hospital, what did you eat? Like, you know, the fear kept me in the pain. And I'm just swearing, I'm never going to do this again, blah, you know, why did I do this to myself, on and on and on. 2 days later, I kid you not, did the exact same thing and felt worse. Now, I thought I was dying 2 nights prior, and here 2 nights later, I'm even worse than that, crying, laying on the floor, just dying in so much pain. And again, I can't tell anybody. I can't go to the hospital. They're going to know. It was awful. I even called out of work that day because I was that sick. And I couldn't believe, how could I possibly do that to myself after the experience I had 2 days prior? Well, when I finally got to OA and learned about the big book, I discovered I have an allergy. I didn't know I had an allergy. I just thought I was crazy with food, and I knew there was something wrong with me, and I just couldn't handle it. You know, there's certain things I had no clue until I read this book, this wonderful, awful story that I could completely relate to. I have an allergy. It was as simple as that. I have an allergy. I had to stop. I had to figure out those foods that I was allergic to, and I had to put them down and had to stop eating them. And then the whole world opened up to me. 12-step program, working the steps, drawing closer to God, working with the sponsor, working with others. And now it's so surreal, I can't even believe that was me 5 years ago, and just so incredibly grateful for, you know, everything that I have learned and walk in this new life that, you know, I don't have to ask, how could this happen? Now I know how this happened. I understand, and I know what to do about it. And so I just wanted to share that because I was so many decades of not understanding what the heck was wrong with me until I got into vision and reading this big book. So thank you all so much. I wish you all a great abstinent day.
Thank you so much, Lisa O. from Massachusetts. Next up, Tina S., followed by Janet B. Good morning, Tina.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for your service. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. And yeah, wow, great shares for sure. And, you know, I too, this is such a, oh, I don't even know the words, the jumping off the cliff place here for me, you know, because when I got here, I, you know, because for many, many years, all I did was put the food down for a period of time. You know, I could put it down for a period of time, and that's part of the allergy of the body. You know, I can put it down for a period of time, but if that's all I'm doing, I'm going to eat for sure. There's going to come a time that I am certainly going to eat, you know, and that's why, you know, this is a disease of the mind, you know, and the rest of the steps after putting down the food and then working steps 2 through 12 is the solution that takes care of my mind. You know, and I am so much like Jim, you know, and again, with all the shares, you know, I'll never do it again. A couple hours later, I'm feeling a little better now, you know, so my mind takes over and then I'm screwed. This time it'll be different. Well, I'll do it this way instead of that way. Or, you know, maybe I'll go there instead of here. And it's just the vicious cycle. So, you know, I just have to know that, you know, it is great that I'm putting down my alcoholic foods. Because I have to, you know, but, you know, the solution for me is continuing on with the steps, having had a spiritual awakening as the result, you know, not a result, as the result. You know, I have a transformation. I'm a different person. You know, I'm looking to somebody else other than me to take care of this stuff. And then I got to give it away in order to keep it. You know, all that stuff that we talk about, you know, through the transformation, and I'm really looking forward to hearing some more shares. So with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much, Tina S. from Florida. All right, next up, Janet B., followed by Rick J. Hey, good morning, Janet.
Hi, good morning, Kelly. Good morning, everyone. This is Janet B., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. So I think there's two questions, right? What is this curious mental phenomena? And then what do we do about it? So here's how I understand the curious mental phenomena, that normally my defense against doing something dangerous is my memory, right? Like I have a severe cat allergy. If someone invites me to her house and she has a cat, instantly my memory will just send a little thought across the bridge to my conscious mind saying, danger, stop. Cats will give you an asthma attack. Remember this time, that time, the other time. And so I don't go where there's a cat. My memory protects me. But when it came to food, it didn't really work, right? I would go down to the corner store to buy a box of cookies, telling myself I'm going to have just one or two. My memory scans the data points in my brain. Remember, this time you said you were going to have one or two, you ate the whole box. Remember, this time you said you were going to have one, you ate the whole box, got a second box, made yourself throw up, couldn't get out of bed the next day. Generates a thought to run across the bridge to my conscious mind to say, danger, stop. You won't be able to stop at just one. Don't do it. Except unlike with cats, the bridge between my memory and my conscious mind was broken, and I had no defense against the first compulsive bite. It's like there was something in me that I couldn't remember. There was a broken bridge there. So then what do we do if we have this curious mental phenomena? Is it like, oh, okay, I have a broken bridge. Now that I know it, I'll get better. Well, no, of course not. I mean, if I knew I had pneumonia and the solution was penicillin, knowing that wouldn't get better, I would have to take penicillin. So what's my solution if I have this broken memory? The bridge to my memory is broken. And I have to build a new bridge. And that's a bridge to God. And that is what these 12 steps are all about. It starts with me admitting that I am a train wreck and I can't control my food or anything. And then surrendering my life into the hands of a loving creator, clearing away the wreckage of my past and living a life of self-sacrifice and helping others. And when I do that, the craziest thing happens. I've built this bridge, and then God himself crosses over that bridge and protects me and keeps me in a state of protection as long as I've submitted to him. So it doesn't matter that the bridge to my memory is broken, and it will always be broken, because now I have a bridge to God, and that is what these beautiful steps teach us to do, to build that bridge so God can protect us. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Janet B. from North Carolina. Next, IPB. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Kelly. Thank you so much for your service, and thank you, Larry, for getting us started and all the beautiful shares. Yeah, this is a very, very, very powerful paragraph for me. And, you know, I have this sort of vision. I'm a very visual person, and I think in terms of seeing things in a way that I can relate to. And the curious mental phenomenon and sound reasoning. And they're these two threads in my brain, you know, these thought lights, you know, they're traveling along. And for me, I visualize that someone who doesn't have this disease does not have the parallel thread always running, you know, that parallel course, right? That's right beside the, you know, the thread. It's almost like if I imagine like a wire, you know, that's carrying electricity, you know, and my sound reasoning, you know, that's the, you know, my instincts and self-preservation, you know, my conscious, my soul, my heart, everything that makes me a person, you know, that is my sound reasoning thread, right? That's running along, or it's in this wire, you know, but running right beside it. And I don't know why, how it got there. It just is. And I can't remove it, but it's like this other, you know, the curious mental phenomenon, the mental twist, the obsession of the mind. You know, I know that, my main problem, it centers in my mind, and it's that parallel wire, you know, that's right beside there. And it's the insane idea of this mental twist that's always there. So that obsession, it keeps growing. Now, it doesn't matter if I'm not eating compulsively, you know, it keeps growing and my sound reasoning keeps shrinking. So anytime that I trigger, you know, that insane idea thread, the obsession thread, the illness thread, the addiction thread, you know, it just immediately explodes in size and just starts coiling tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter around me, my sound reasoning, my soul, everything that I am as a person when I was born, you know, and it just coils tighter, you know, it's like a constrictor. So even when I put the food down, and even when I'm going to OA meetings, all that stuff, it doesn't really matter. That's good. That's a beginning. But the only thing that can overpower and remove that obsessive twist of the mind, that other wire that's always running there, is that of a higher power. And if I'm not connected to the higher power, I will always be a victim to that thread that's never going to leave. It'll always be triggered by whatever I put in my mouth, but my higher power wire will always overwhelm it. Thanks for letting me share that a pass.
Thanks so much, Rick J. And Rick's from North Carolina. Next up is Pete B., followed by Gail H. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for taking the meeting, and thanks, Larry, for the opening. My name's Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. And, you know, I love how, you know, this, everything that we're reading, it's just re-emphasizing and emphasizing the fact that we have become insane. You know, we're insane. You know, it's an insanely trivial excuse and the insane idea. Right? And we've either drank our way there or we just are there, but we have to get to this point to understand that we have become insane. And you know what I the message that I get from this book, and the message that I'm trying to carry, because that's what I think I'm responsible to do, is that, you know, this message tells us that we were insane, but we get restored to sanity. And we don't get restored to sanity by this unconditional dependence upon practices and unconditional dependence upon people and unconditional dependence on meetings and unconditional dependence on, you know, processes. we get restored to sanity by unconditional dependence upon God. You know, I'm grateful for the recovered people that were here when I got here, that reminded me that my recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon my relationship with God, right? Because people are going to fail us. I was told that I have to learn to stand alone. I'd have to learn to persevere and get through whatever challenge that faces me, because I have those resources. I have those capabilities. I've been restored to sanity. I'm able to utilize my will. I'm able to utilize the gifts, the character, the qualities that the Creator's put in me. To know that, you know what, when all else fails, you may just have to stand alone. And right now, man, I'm standing alone. And I know that, you know, like, I will never recover from compulsive overeat, from the physical aspect of being a compulsive overeater. I will never recover from that. I will always be, just like alcoholics are always alcoholic. But I have recovered from alcoholism. I have recovered from the mental condition that tells me I don't have this condition. And that's what the message of this book brings, is that sanity will be restored. And as long as I don't put the substance in my body or engage in the behavior that causes the phenomenon of craving, I can't get drunk. I can't get the phenomenon of craving. And everything's going to be okay as long as that doesn't get triggered. I know where my dependence needs to be. And I'm grateful that it's
That's
there.
That's time, Pete.
Thanks, Kelly.
Pete, where are you calling from?
Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, I knew that. I went blank. That's Pete B. from Pennsylvania. All right, so before we move forward, let me tell you guys where we're at. We are in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a good start. We are in More About Alcoholism, and we're on page 37, second paragraph. You may think this is an extreme case. Through that paragraph, ending with how it could have happened. All right, so moving forward, we now have Gail H. followed by Lee Ann W. Good morning, Gail.
Good morning. I'm Gail H. from Seattle, Washington, and recovering today. Very grateful for this meeting, and it, like so many that I listen to, and you all have such remarkable messages. It took 18 years of being in this program to begin to get that gift of abstinence. And after 28 years of active bulimia and many hospitalizations, and I do think 20 interventions. I don't think I'm exaggerating. And just the grace of, you know, being able, with God's help, this program, you know, and I really have been blessed by God with skin. And yet that ability in our program that says people will disappoint us always. And, you know, I disappoint others as well. So that right sizes things for me. But along these 36 years of recovery, I got to enjoy lots of life. However, in the past couple of years, my husband of 50 years died 8 months ago, and I had three huge physical events that occurred, and I have not been able to come to terms with the weight loss, given that, you know, I was abstinent all these years and grateful for it, but with getting sick, my husband's death, I wound up with malnutrition and an acute loss of weight. And I have not been able, and with God's help, to acknowledge that I'm in a state of, you know, anorexia. And you know, my training is all in this area. So, you know, here is this unconscious, what Bill calls unconscious arrogance of being humbled. And yet I just needed to name it and claim it. It is what's so, it is where I am, it wasn't, it just is what it is. And, you know, with this program, with God's help and enough grace today, I got to call in. Thank you all for listening. And, you know, this is growth to be able to just name it. It's been here for a while. But thank you all. And thank you for your service, Kelly, honey.
Well, thank you so much, Gail H. That's Gail from Washington. Next up, Leanne W., followed by Melissa B. Good morning, Leanne.
Good morning. My name is Leanne W. from Massachusetts and grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. And when reading this, what really jumped out at me was when it said, this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have reflected more than Jim upon the consequences. And then the sound reasoning had failed. The insane idea won out. And for me, especially, like when I came into this program, been around this program for a long time. I'm 61 years old. I came first in the doors when I was 28. And for a long time, I was a chronic relapser. I knew what I needed to do. I knew I needed to keep my alcoholic foods down. But when I reflected on what my alcoholic foods were, they were fast, they were easy, they were readily accessible. The food industry made sure of that. They made sure that when I got into those blank mental blank spots, when I was filled with emotions and you know, I knew logically I couldn't pick up, but the emotional ideas always went out. Those things were readily available. And so we don't get recovered from working the tools, but especially, you know, when I was chronically relapsing, the tools were instrumental. I needed to have that plan of action. I needed to be prepared for those times when I knew they were going to come up, they were going to creep up, I was going to have those mental, you know, blank spots, I was going to be filled with emotions. You know, early on, filled, you have that pink cloud, things are wonderful, but they're there because that is life, that's life. And so, you know, to have a meal plan, to have the foods that I needed in the fridge or in the cabinet so that when I needed to have my healthy meal, it wasn't my alcoholic food quick and easy. Because it's like if I'm filled with emotions and I'm depressed and I'm just, you know, not, I don't have the strength to do what I need to do to remain abstinent, I can make all the phone calls that I want. But it's like if the pizza is there and it's fast, then that's there. But if I'm prepared, if I'm using my plan of action and I'm prepared, then I've taken care of myself to be able to do what I need to do. And then I can make the phone call and I can do the writing. And when I get through the steps, I do the 10 steps. But it's like I need to be prepared. I need to have that plan of action. And, you know, having this fellowship and being ready for those times has been instrumental for me and in my program. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Leanne W. from Massachusetts. Next up, we have Melissa B., and then we'll be opening up for a few more shares. Good morning, Melissa. Where are you calling from?
Good morning. My name is Melissa B., and I'm calling from Michigan. And the part that stands out to me from this paragraph is But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. And the insane idea went out. And yeah, I'm fairly new to the program, but this has played out in my life over and over and over again for as long as I can remember. I have perfectionistic tendencies, and I it makes me want to give up any time that I fail. And in my disease, I fail a lot. I keep going to food, and then I give up, and then I avoid God, and I avoid doing the things that I know I need to do. And then my failures make me think that it's impossible. And I'm learning through this program that on my own it is impossible. I am powerless on my own, but I need this. It's possible with this program, and it's possible with God. He has the power to help me recover. And inevitably, and until I'm recovered and I'm pretty sure the rest of my life, there will be insanity that wins out, because I have a disease that is insane, and I keep going to food when all logic suggests that it is a bad choice. Logic doesn't matter. I keep going back to food anyway. So I need this program. I need to work these steps, and I need to rework them over and over until I'm transformed, and then every day until I die. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you so much, Melissa B. from Michigan. Okay, guys, we're going to open the floor for more sharing. So we value your experience, but we ask you limit your sharing to every third day. So if you shared last Friday or yesterday on any vision meeting, please step back. Who would like to share?
Lisa B. Ohio.
Lisa B. Somebody from Ohio.
Amy G.
Jennifer. It's Jennifer C. from Ohio.
Oh, hey, Jennifer. Okay, gotcha.
Hi.
Jennifer C. Amy, I got you, Amy G. Got you, Amy.
Vanita L.
Vanita L. Okay.
Gusty N.
What was it? Gusty.
Barbara E.
Gusty, like a big gusty wind.
Dusty.
N. Yeah.
Dusty N. Okay.
Yes.
Well, Barbara, I'll put you on there, but I doubt we'll have time. So.
Okay.
Here's who I have.
I wasn't unmuted.
I have Lisa B, Jennifer C, Amy G, Vanita L, Dusty N, and probably not Barbara E, but there she is. All right, so let's all make sure you're muted to press star one. We'll get started with Lisa B, followed by Jennifer C. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Kelly. Can you hear me? This is Lisa.
Yeah, good and clear.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Lisa B. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in South Carolina, and I do spell my name L-E-S-A. This has been such a powerful meeting. It's so good to just really hear you all and study this paragraph. I was thinking about where it says, this kind of thinking being characteristic for every single one of us, but being able to share with other compulsive overeaters that are recovered, you know, you can sometimes hear my mental twist and my mental blank spots, and I don't hear it in myself. That's why I need to share with other compulsive overeaters that are recovered. And then when I can share with a newcomer, even if I'm not in the greatest space, but I am recovered, I am spiritually awakened, but I can still be sometimes crazy. But being able to get out of myself and share with a newcomer, I can hear their mental blank spot and their mental twist, and I can share my experience, strength, and hope and what I did. And it just is such a gift, you know, to be able to share that. And let the gift that's inside of me come out and bless them, and it blesses me. But I also love where it talks about some insanely trivial excuse. You know, I can be riddled with self-pity and fear, and those are the things that, those would be my excuses, you know, for binging. But I could also binge or compulsively eat or from excitement and happiness, you know, and the sound reasoning. I tried everything to have sound reasoning to manage and control the volume that I wanted to eat and not show the results, or to just be able to eat the way I wanted to eat with freedom. I tried spiritual practices. I tried being a better person by getting into self-improvement books and all of that. And none of it, it just all failed to hold me in check. And today it's God that holds me in check through these 12 steps. And, you know, with all earnestness and sincerity, yes, I can have that earnestness and I can have that sincerity even today, but it's an action program and I have fellows and God and the steps to always remind me that it's all action, Lisa. It doesn't matter, you know, what you want. I mean, I could have the best thoughts and ideas and intentions, but I have to be taking action every day, you know, through this work. And it always starts through entire abstinence and then going through the work and having that spiritual transformation. So I'm really happy to be here. Thank you all for sharing. I pass.
Thank you so much, Lisa B. from South Carolina. Next up, we have Jennifer C., followed by Amy G. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. This is Jennifer C., a recovering compulsive overeater in Ohio. I feel like looking at the writing about the sound reasoning. When I was in my disease and still now is recovering, my sound reasoning is insane. So if my sound reasoning failed, it's because it was insane. And it's a vicious cycle. Like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, sound reasoning, not sound, because I'm a compulsive overeater. I have a disease. My sound thinking is non-existent. And so the fact that the insane idea won out, of course it did, because I'm insane. It's a quote from a book about you're just as sane as I am. And this disease, like, I can rationalize all of these insane thoughts because I'm an insane thinker. And as was mentioned before, this book shows me how to build a bridge, to build the bridge to God, where the same thinking, as it says in our steps, restore me to sanity. Sanity is God's will. There is no insane thinking in God's will. It is a perfect plan. And until that bridge is built and I start to live in his will and to experience the sanity of God's will, I will just drown in my insane thinking. So I just, this paragraph, my goodness. Anyway, I think that's enough for me, and I will pass. Have a beautiful day, everyone.
Thank you so much, Jennifer C. from Ohio. Next up, we have Amy G., followed by Vanita L. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning, Kelly. This is Amy G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Thank you, everyone, for an awesome meeting. I don't think I'm going to say anything new here, but I feel like it bears repeating this whole idea of the phenomenon or phenomena. I looked it up in the dictionary, and it's like a fact or situation observed or exists to happen whose explanation is in question. Boy, does that describe me when it comes to my compulsive overeating, that parallel insane thinking that I don't have a reasoning for, and it's crazy. And what's so cunning and baffling to me about this disease is that I don't have a curious mental phenomenon when it comes to other areas of my life. I can think reasonably, I can act rationally, I can understand consequences of my behavior. But because of my compulsive overeating and this spiritual malady and discomfort of living in my life, restless, irritable, and discontent, like the big book talks about earlier in the doctor's opinion, right? Why do we eat? Because we're restless, irritable, and discontent, the RIDS. Because of the way I live my life, I live constantly in the RIDS and that spiritual malady that is part of the mental phenomena, because it becomes a disconnect. When I am in discomfort, whether I recognize it, whether I feel it, or whether I don't, the disconnect, the mental obsession occurs. To me, the trigger for the mental obsession is the restless irritability and discontentedness of how I live my life. And when I am in that, I am willing to make the supreme sacrifice and have any kind of consequence after the fact. But first, I want my fix. And that phenomena that occurs over and over again, I am without mental defense. You know, I spent almost the first 5 years of my life in recovery completely understanding the physical allergy. I knew when I put those substances into my body, sugar, high fat, flour, and even volume, I was not going to be able to stop. But what I didn't grasp was the spiritual malady underlying the mental phenomena, the mental obsession that would trigger this again and again and again. I needed something to replace that mental phenomena. And to me, that was my higher power, God, through the process of working these steps, through the action, the acting as if, praying to God, rowed ashore, going through at least enough discomfort to put the food down while I worked the steps, and let the program help me and the fellowship support me as I went through the steps so that I could get to the point where I could connect to power, power greater than myself. Because clearly it's drilled down again and again, and we're coming up against another example again and again, that I am without mental defense against the first bite because of my mental obsession, because of my spiritual malady. I need something outside of myself to fix me. And if I don't, then I am in trouble again and again and again, because this phenomena will happen
again and again.
And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Amy G. from Maryland. Next up, we have Vanita L., and we might have time for Dusty N. Hey, Vanita.
Good morning, everybody. Vanita L., recovered compulsive overeater from Georgia. And yeah, I always need constant reminders about the mental, well, to stay away from listening to people and realizing, yes, you know, you have to stay away from those foods, but also that mental twist, which I can definitely have with food if I don't keep myself spiritually fit. And, you know, someone brought me, like they knew they're new to me, and they brought me a chocolate bar, and they said, look, it's 85% cacao. It has very little sugar in it. You know, and they were trying to adapt to my needs, you know. And I thought, you know, briefly, and then I said, you know what, I'll keep this here for when you come. You know, I can't eat this. I can't do that. I cannot go there, you know. And then I showed them, because there's a chocolate that I will eat sometimes with Stevie, and it, you know, and I said I can eat this, and so they're free to buy it for me if they want to buy me chocolate again. But it's really good for me to remember, right, like that I was really glad that I think Vision was the first place that really explained to me about that mental blank spot, which I see now in how it works. But anyway, thank God for being reminded about these principles. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Vanita L. And Dusty N., you've got time. You're up.
Thank you. This is Dusty N. from West Virginia, recovered and grateful to be with you this morning. For me, this was so helpful. I just really, really needed this paragraph this morning and this reminder of I don't even know if it's relapse or just he never really got it. And part of where I am today is that I've picked up a couple of new sponsees, and they're struggling with their abstinence. And every morning I wait for their phone call, and every morning it's, oh, I didn't make it. And this morning I was mad. I was just really mad. Like, you know, wanting to shake them and wanting to shake myself. What am I doing wrong? And I just really needed the reminder that this is a serious mental twist, and it is not about me and it's not about them. It is really, it takes what it takes, and to remember that it took me what it took me, and it took me a long time. It took me a lot of relapse. It took me a lot of, thinking that I had abstinence when I really didn't, or pretending I did, or just flat out lying to my sponsors when I would go off my plan. And so I think, again, I just really needed this reminder to hold all of us with compassion, to hold myself with compassion, to hold my sponsees with compassion. And compassion doesn't necessarily mean being nice. It also can mean you know, challenging people with the reality of our disease and telling the truth about my own experience and what it took for me to finally be able to put down the food, but not to be not to take it out on anybody, that it really is our disease in the parking lot doing push-ups while we go about our business. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
Kelly, you're muted.
Okay, I'm unmuted. So sorry. I was thinking somebody's kid is unmuted, and I'm not muted. Anyway, thank you for sharing, everyone. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. Share ID for today, August 6, 2024, is 21631. 21631. So we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Colleen M., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Hey, thank you, Kelly. Colleen M. from Maryland, recovered compulsive eater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realized we knew only a little. God would constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditations what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as we trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.